This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.
Well, happy Thor's Day to everyone out there, especially Chris Hemsworth, especially with the new Thor trailer coming out. My name is Patricia W. Fisher, and we are going to be talking books today. Now, all of my guests that I've had on so far have always been women, but today I am very excited to get to talk to a friend of mine who I discovered, I believe, on Twitter a couple of years ago, author Rich Amui. And with over 300,000 downloads from readers around the world, Rich writes about romance from a guy's perspective. This former radio personality writes fun, quirky, and always romantic comedies, full-time with the titles like Eclair to Remember, Coffee, Tea, or Me, and his latest, Board of the Rings. And just like his stories, Rich has found his happily ever after with a kiss monster imported from Spain named Sylvie. Rich believes in public displays of affection, silliness, infinite possibilities, donuts, gratitude, laughter, and happily ever after, as well as jumping for joy, which we'll talk about in a second. And the month of October, all proceeds from his book, Mr. Crotchety, will be donated for breast cancer research. And you can find him on his website, Facebook, and Twitter, all of which are linked on the show's information. But right now, let's talk to Rich. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to bring some testosterone your way.
Yes, yes. Well, you do a good job. It's always fun to see you at conferences and talk to you because you always have the coolest projects going on. So, I know a lot of people ask, because you were a DJ and you worked in broadcast journalism and media. Tell me how you came about into writing romance, because a lot of guys say, well, they'll write thrillers or biographies or whatever, but why romance?
I've always been obsessed with romantic comedies ever since the 80s, back when Harry Met Sally and all the John Cusack movies, and completely obsessed, and I never could get enough of them. The movie industry couldn't make them fast enough because I would always be there on opening day and then go through withdrawals when I had nothing else to watch. I've always been a big fan, and getting into the writing of it, though, that came much later. As you mentioned, I had my 33-year career in radio, and towards the end of that career, I met my wife-to-be. Now, she is now my wife, but she was taking a writing class at Stanford, and I told her I always wanted to write movie scripts or get into something like that. And she encouraged me to take a writing class at Stanford, and I ended up taking four over a two-year period. And after that, and there were a lot of them were short stories.
Okay.
And from one of those short stories, she absolutely loved, and she said and encouraged me to turn that into a novel. And so I had to, which was a big undertaking because I had no idea about novels, so I had to turn basically a 20-page story into 350 pages. I did it, and that ended up being my debut novel, 5 Minutes Late. And since then, I've published 10 romantic comedies in 3 years.
So you're busy. I mean, this is a full-time gig.
Yeah, when I first started, I set out some goals on how I wanted to do it, and I thought, okay, realistically, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I felt good about it. I was motivated, and I was confident about it, and I thought, I think if I give myself 3 to 5 years, I think I can make this a full-time career. It actually only took about 6 months before I quit my job and started writing full-time.
That's nice. I mean, you were very focused and ready to jump in this with both feet.
Yeah, and I did do a lot of research on so many different things in regards to publishing and marketing and romance and creative writing and just so many, I mean, hours and hours and days, months actually of research trying to figure out how I was going to go at it and what I was going to do. So I had a pretty good plan at the beginning, and that really helped.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like trying learning to swim. You don't just jump in the pool, although some people think that's how you do it, but you flail around a lot trying to get to the side. So having your ducks in a row initially does help immensely. So tell me, so you were obsessed, and I know you've watched a lot since then, and thank goodness for Netflix and all those things now that we don't have to wait for movies to come out anymore like we did in the 80s and 90s. What are your five favorite rom-coms ever?
Oh, boy. That's that's a good question, and that is a very difficult question because I love so many. But I'll just kind of give you off the top of my head what comes first. And I know I'm going to miss some other favorites just because you caught me off guard with this, but I'll just say top of my head, When Harry Met Sally, of course. You've Got Mail. Notting Hill is definitely way up there. And
okay.
Love Actually. The Runaway Bride.
Right.
I could go on for a long time with this question because you should have asked me what are your top 500 romantic comedies.
And it's what's fun about them, and I know that people talk about that with romance, and I'm sure you've had this conversation with people, is, you know, why would anyone watch a romance? Because we all know how it's going to end. It's like, well, that's like asking why would we watch, you know, Spider-Man or Superman or you know, any movie like that. We know the hero's going to be triumphant. We just don't know how they're going to get there. So we know the happily ever after is going to get there. We just don't know how.
Yeah, and that's kind of the fun part. Yes, I mean, that's the reason why I write romance and romantic comedies, because I love happy endings, and I want to give everybody a happy ending. And that's what I look for in a lot of movies. I mean, I do watch an occasional drama. I mean, I've seen some pretty good movies that weren't romantic comedies, like Good Will Hunting and The Shawshank Redemption and stuff like that. But I always gravitate back towards romantic comedies because you get the added bonus of the humor in there. So you get the best of both worlds. You get the happy ending with the love of your life, plus you get to laugh along the way. And there's nothing better than that for me.
Yeah, laughter does soothe a lot of ills, even if it's just for a little bit. I mean, I think it helps reduce that tension that we're all feeling in general, especially now going into holiday season and everything.
Yeah, and you say it helps for a little bit, but sometimes, you know, we watch the same movie 20 times in a row.
Right.
I don't know. I think I've seen You've Got Mail at least 10 to 12 times, I'm guessing, probably more than that. And a lot of those movies, you know, it's just, I haven't seen that in 6 months. I guess I'll watch it again.
Right. Well, we're talking about Happily Ever After, which brings me to weddings, of course. And you were a DJ for weddings.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me the top three songs that were requested most often at weddings that you DJ.
Wow, these are good questions. Okay, so if you're talking about like a first dance for the bride and groom, their very first dance, one of the very tops. Well, okay, they changed over the years, of course, because we would go through phases. When a new song came out, like back when Celine Dion sang Because You Love Me, that was huge for probably 5 years. Probably 5 years. And then everybody was tired of it and nobody was requesting it. That happened a lot with a bunch of other songs where they would just – every bride seemed to choose it for a couple of years. But the one that has pretty much stood the test of time and is still a classic and still gives me goosebumps when I hear it is At Last by Etta James.
Right.
And that one is just one of those, if I see it in a movie or when I was DJing, if I had played it for the bride and groom, just love the song. Beautiful song.
So what about the first dance where everybody dances? What were the top three for that? And again, I know this is, you know, cyclical. You'll have, you know, top 50 or top whatever, 40 songs that people play for that year. But, I mean, there's kind of the old favorites that people always dance to.
Yeah. I mean, and there are some of those songs that are so popular at weddings, but a lot of times it's a love-hate relationship with the guests. So you get about maybe 60 or 70% of the guests who just love it, and then the other ones are just tired of it. Like, to give you an example, some of the songs you'll hear at weddings that are really popular are like Celebration by Kool and the Gang or Twist
Sure.
and Shout by the Beatles. Those types of I would get a request for those guaranteed almost at every single wedding. But you would have some people there like, oh, here we go. I knew it was going to come. Here's Celebration. So it's so I never got really tired of it, which is surprising because I was the one that, you know, I heard it more than the guests because, you know, I DJed over close to 1,500 weddings when I was doing that. And I had to play those songs pretty much over and over again every week. Some of the songs varied, but so a lot of times people wanted to start out with Celebration by Kool and the Gang just because it was a celebration. There was one that was another
Sure.
one that was popular for many years, and I Got a Feeling by the Black Eyed Peas. That
Right.
was huge for many years. But I think probably Celebration was probably one of the biggest.
Well, I laugh because you say that. When my husband and I went on our honeymoon to Hawaii, we were on a dinner cruise that evening, and there was a family on the cruise that was from Japan, and they spoke no English at all, but they turned on that song, and they knew the chorus. It was actually delightful to watch them dance because they were just like, you know, throwing their arms up and dancing and saying the chorus. It was wonderful. So it's fun to see music bring people together unexpectedly.
Yeah, I agree. That was one of my favorite parts of the job, being a DJ, not on the radio. Well, there's a different kind of thing on the radio, but getting that live in-person experience of a wedding, that was one of my favorite things, was to watch people dance and the excitement and the thrill of, you know, even the first dance and the way they look at each other when they're dancing and how everybody's just staring at them and taking pictures all around the room. Music is universal, and it's an amazing thing to experience.
So with you writing, and that just kind of falls into you writing romance. I mean, you've got all of this material that you've seen at weddings, and of course, I'm sure there have been disasters as well. But, all that sensory and everything, you've pulled that into your books.
Yeah, weddings, and I have at least, just in the near future, I have three more romantic comedies coming up where the central focus is a wedding, because I do love weddings. I did DJ for many years, but I never got tired of them, and I still enjoy being a guest and dancing and eating and celebrating with the bride and groom. And because of that, I love putting a wedding, if I can, in my story, and I have a couple of pretty good ones coming up that I'm going to have a lot of fun with. You know, of course, there's going to be a little bit of mayhem and some mishaps,
right.
but that's kind of the fun of writing it.
Right. What can you come up with? Have you now, when you've written as a obviously as a man, because you are, do you have more men or women come up to you to talk about your books?
Oh, definitely women. I think of the guys, I haven't seen an exact statistic, but just by, you know, looking at the people who who are subscribed to my newsletter, who want to get updates, or people who follow me on Facebook, there are a lot of women. I would say probably about 90 to 95% women.
Do you think it helps women understand the male brain better, right? Reading a book written by a romance novel written by a man?
I think it could. Although, you know, I can, since I am writing romantic comedies, one of the beauties of it is the comedy portion, which I can exaggerate a little bit for comedy purposes, which is a lot of fun. But I think that is a common thing that I've heard in either a review of one of my books or just talking to somebody in person, is I like how you write what's going on in the mind of the guy when he's, mm-hmm. you know, when he's trying to ask the girl out or when something goes wrong in the story, and you get to see inside his head what he's thinking. I've had many people say they like to get that perspective.
Yeah, I think it's kind of fun because I you know, there's been discussion, and there was the Washington Post write-up recently about romance novels, and it's interesting for someone who's actually doing the work, like you're doing, versus someone who says, well, how hard can it be? And we all know books are just hard to write, period. But then you have someone who's actually writing versus someone who's talking about how it can't be that big of a deal, versus, you know, any other genre. Have you experienced that from other people who weren't necessarily writers, but who were like, well, this must be an easy gig for you?
No, I don't think so. I think a lot of people were actually, when they find out that I write romantic comedies, usually their eyes go open wide, like, really?
Right.
Because I don't, I mean, it's not easy for me. I have some moments of, you know, being a writer when you're, it's just coming out of you and flowing, but there are plenty of moments where you want to pull your hair out or it's actually falling out on its own. And
yes.
That's just the normal thing because it's hard. You're using that creative side of your brain and it's not an easy thing. It's not like playing a sport that you've mastered. I mean, I know there are some authors who can do that. They turn it on and they'll put it out book after book after book. But I think for the majority of authors, they go through those ups and downs when they're in a story. They're in the zone, then they're out of the zone, and they come to a little roadblock. And so I don't think it's an easy thing. I'm surprised if anybody says it's easy to write a romance. Yes, you can say, well, we know it's going to be a happy ending, of course, but how are you going to get to that happy ending? It's not as easy as some people, you know, if they're criticizing, saying that anybody can do it or it's an easy thing. No way. And then you add humor to the mix, and that's not an easy combination. And I admit, I do have difficult days, but the payoff is amazing.
And it is, and you've done a beautiful job. It was fun because I believe it was a few years ago that I found you. I ran across you on Twitter, and was, you know, looking at your covers, and you've got these really great, cool covers and these great titles. And I was like, this is somebody I want to read. This is somebody that's fun. And you know, with that, let me ask you: do you come up with your titles first? Or do you come up with a story and then weave it in, or is it kind of back and forth? How do you do that?
That's so funny you ask that because I freak some people out when I tell them this because they're like, what? Because I just, you know, like my book, my last one that I published in May, Board of the Rings, well, yes, I came up with the title ahead of time. I had no idea what the story was going to be about, who was going to be in it, where they were, what they were going to do. I just thought, you know what? You know, I saw somebody was talking about Lord of the Rings. I said, I'd like to do like something play off, because I played off some movie titles in a couple of my books. And I thought,
right.
Oh, Lord of the Rings. And then, you know, and then I think, you know, okay, what can I do with that? And then I just start brainstorming of how can I tie that into a story, Lord of the Rings? Is it somebody who's been married a whole bunch of times and those are wedding rings and there's no way they're going to do it again? Or do they work in a jewelry shop and sell rings, or is it both? So
right.
It was the whole brainstorming of that, of how I came up with the story after the title. So I would tell you that probably out of my 10 romantic comedies, I think 8 of them, I came up with the title before I even knew what the story was going to be about.
But it, I mean, it's a challenge. It's like putting a puzzle together. It's you know, here's the box top, and that's what it's supposed to look like when you're done. And then here are the pieces. So figure it out. I mean, it works.
Yeah, and that it's actually fun for me when I do that. And here's another thing that I do that I know a lot of authors don't do is I will, after I come up with the title and before I even figure out what the story is about, I'm already putting a cover together. And a lot of times I already have the cover done before I've even written the first word.
Wow.
Just because I get something in my head. My wife, Sylvie, she'll sketch something on a piece of paper. I say, I'm thinking of this. Like, for instance, my book, Mr. Crotchety, I thought, wouldn't it be cool if, you know, since the woman he's going to meet is the most annoyingly positive woman in the world, and he's crotchety, and they bang heads, wouldn't it be cool on the cover if maybe they're both outside, and his half of the cover, he's under an umbrella in a storm, and on her side, she's under the sunshine? And so
yeah.
she sketched it out on a piece of paper, and then I sent it to my cover artist, who is in England, and she actually drew it and made it happen.
Well, it's brilliant. I mean, I love that idea. And then speaking of Mr. Crotchety, this month is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And for the entire month of October, all proceeds of this book, Mr. Crotchety, will be donated for breast cancer research. And you posted this on Facebook. Why? But can you give us a little bit of why you've decided to do this?
Yeah, I actually did it last year. And, the story of Mr. Crotchety, she is a breast cancer survivor, and of course she's going to get her happily ever after. So I thought the book tied in well, and he has a connection to cancer in his past as well. So I thought, mm-hmm. Well, maybe that book would be one that I could do some good with during Breast Cancer Awareness Month in October. So I decided that I started it last year, where I would just donate 100% of the proceeds to the fight against cancer. And then this is I decided to do it again this year. And because there are so many people who have been touched by cancer, whether it's themselves or somebody they love that they lost, and that's probably one of the most hated words in the English language is cancer.
Right.
And I mean, I just got a text this morning from one of my writer friends, and she said, well, you weren't with us because since we moved away, we usually had a little get together with other writers. And she goes, well, you weren't there yesterday. So I thought I'd share with you that I just found out I have breast cancer. And
wow.
And so I just found that out this morning. So it's obviously it's everywhere. Plenty of people have had it. My hope is just by doing this, one day, you know, every woman will have her happily ever after. You know, there maybe even one day there won't be breast cancer. That's my hope.
Yeah, Yeah, well, believe me, I get
and
that.
And just cancer in general, just, you know, it's just, so that's my little way of helping out, and I'm glad I'm able to do that.
So, and I appreciate you acknowledging that and doing that, and now, you know, with that personal connection, I know that kind of pushes the bar up a little bit for getting the word out, you know, making sure people take care of themselves.
Yeah.
So you have a new release. Well, you're working on something right now. What is your, it's Madam Love, actually.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about your newest project.
So this has a connection to my, well, I can't remember which book that was, if it's the fourth or fifth, but
they all run together book, after a while, don't they?
I always ask my wife, I say, wait, who is the hero in that book? And she, who is the main protagonist? Because sometimes my memory is not the best, and she has to remind me who some of my characters were in past books. And
yeah.
But this book, Madam Love, actually is connected to my romantic comedy, Liliana Jones and the Temple of Groom.
Okay.
In that story, Madam Love appeared and is what would you call a fortune teller, clairvoyant, psychic, any of the above you can call. And but she only works on love and finding people love. And I made her kind of a fun, quirky character who meets people at Panda Express restaurants. And just she's kind of goofy and out there and a lot of fun. So I got some feedback from her, from readers about her saying that that'd be kind of fun if she had her own story. And I said, you know what, that's a great idea. So I finally got around to it, and that's what I'm working on right now is her story. And I'm having fun with it.
Well, it sounds like a blast. So we have about 2 minutes left. And so one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is also you have on your website. So if you haven't checked out Rich's website, it's Rich Amooi, so RichAmooi.com. And he has a little section there called Jumping for Joy. Tell me about why you started that.
That's funny you mentioned that. That's probably my favorite page on the website. You know what, I'm trying to remember how it started, but one time we were on a trip somewhere and there was a big rock. And then I told Sylvia, I said, hey, take a picture of me as I jump off that rock. And she said, okay. And I had a funny, silly face. And I said, yeah, I mean, I said, that was fun. And it's an expression of joy and happiness. So I decided to turn it into something where I was doing it regularly, jumping for joy, and I would do it in different parts around the country and the world where I would jump off of something, be airborne, and give
sure.
a thumbs up or have a goofy smile on my face. And so now I don't know how many times I've done it now, maybe 15 times, and I think I'm due for another one here soon.
I think so, because I was looking, and I'm like, wait a minute, do you have any in San Diego and your new digs around there? So we need to post some pictures.
I do have one down south in Coronado, just so close to San Diego, but I'll have to do one soon. And I think it's a good way to spread positivity. It's happiness and joy, and that's always a good thing.
Absolutely. Well, Rich, thank you so much for being on the show today and talking about your books. If you want a copy of Mr. Crotchety, the link is up on the website for Readers Entertainment Radio for today's show. 100% of the proceeds will be donated for breast cancer research. You can also find Rich on his website, on Facebook, and on Twitter. And when is your newest book, when do you expect it to be live?
It should be right around December 1st.
Perfect. Well, I will be looking for it, and you guys look for it too. It's Madam Love, actually. And we are talking to Rich Amooi, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you soon. This is Patricia W. Fisher with Readers Entertainment Radio. Have a great Thursday, everybody.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.